You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
How are you feeling after that, Matt?
I feel a lot better than Bob.
Extra Time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
You guys are the experts. You'll probably have to analyze that.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from Kansas City, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental. From my basement, I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, David Goss, Matt Doyle. It's a beautiful day, boys. It's a warm day in your part. Dave, I see there's no hoodie. I see there's no beanie. I see you're not wearing a scarf. It looks like normal times. That's a good start for you on this show.
Indoors, I'm over 60 degrees Fahrenheit for the people in Canada. I don't know. Don't know what to do. And so life is good right now.
A little bit of normalcy in these times. I got a big show for you coming today. John Arnold of Stryker, Texas. If you need the news in Texas, you need to check out Stryker. He's going to talk to us about everything going on down in the Lone Star State. But in particular, I am interested to understand what's next for FC Dallas, Academy, first team, and what do you do with this money that Clark Hunt and Dan Hunt say is going to be plowed back into the club? What happens next? I think they've already won the offseason, but this could be even bigger. We're going to have Greg Berhalter on the show, U.S. National Team Manager. I don't think I need to give him an introduction. You watch the January camp game. You listen to us rave about it. We will talk through what is to come for the national team this year, a crazy year with Greg, what he saw in January camp, and what he sees overall from his player pool that just looks like it keeps getting stronger and stronger and stronger. A ton of transfers around Major League Soccer. We're going to dig into those as well. We'll hit the mailbag too. But first, I got to ask you guys about the big story of the day. The Philadelphia Union out here blowing my socks off with the second kit, with the lightning bolts, with the Sons of Ben's colors. Doyle, this might not be up your wheelhouse. But I love this. Like, these are the little off-season things that I see that. I'm like, God, I can't wait to see the Union wear this kit. I love the fact that the Union went out and didn't just say, oh, we're going to do some, hey, we'll ask a couple people. We'll do some surveys. What do you think this club represents? No, they stuffed a bunch of people in a room. They made them part of the process. And from that was birthed the magnificent kit that I am basically begging the Union to send me right now. I didn't really realize I was doing that, but I am doing that. So Philadelphia Union, if you'd like to send me a kit, I wear large. I love what you've done. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing.
Yeah, so kit discussions, they're not up my wheelhouse the way that mixed metaphors are up your wheelhouse, maybe. But no, it's gorgeous and it's distinct. And that's what I really care about. Does it look different out there? Is it immediately identifiable when you turn on the TV and you're watching this team? And I like the fact that the Union have gone in that direction. My favorite kits around the league over the years have been the ones that stand out a bit. And this certainly checks that box. So therefore, it is in fact up my wheelhouse.
Is that up your wheelhouse? Up your alley?
Up your alley in your wheelhouse.
Yeah, I was going back and forth. It was like a big circular motion in my brain on that one. I love it. It's really, really a beautiful thing. And I think the process is what a lot of teams and clubs should look around, not just in this league, but around the world and say, that is the right way to do it. That's how we get our supporters engaged, and that's how we get them feeling like they have ownership in this club, which ultimately is the most important thing. So congratulations to the Union. Reports out there that the only third kit in the league might be Atlanta United. So that is definitely something you could hit us up in the mail about. Do that if you'd like to. Producer Anders, his reminder of the day is that CONCACAF has Lille atop Ligue 1 after Tim Weah and Jonathan David both scored in a 3-0 win for Lille on Wednesday. We really dug into the American abroad side, but we have not done as much on the Canadians abroad side. I mean, we've given Kyle Larin a little bit of his props, which he absolutely deserves. He's pushing for the Golden Boot in Turkey, talking about maybe making a big move to England, which is where he wanted to be all along. Of course, you have Jonathan David, Alfonso Davies this year, not as good, but we would be remiss, Dave, and I know you are Canada's own, hat tip to you, to not talk more about the Canadian national team and what a golden era it is right now for them.
Yeah, the man couldn't distinguish between Fahrenheit and Celsius at the top of the show, and now we're calling him Canada's own. Yeah.
Well,
everyone knows Canadian public schools don't really teach math, so I'm celebrating them and not knowing the conversion rates.
Is that math or is that science?
Oh boy.
I think a conversion rate's probably math. My girlfriend tried to do physics the other day with like people's lives in stake. She's like, do you think you can help me with this formula? I was like, no.
You absolutely reach out absolutely to not. Yeah. Absolutely not.
Then I proceeded to reach out to people I was friends with who are not experts. So it went pretty poorly. But yeah, it's been exciting for Canada on the Kyle Larin front, which is super interesting. So Besiktas fighting for the championship. They brought Schenk Tosin back from Everton on loan. So you talk about Kyle Larin wanting to leave. This could be interesting. Does it impinge on his playing time? Does it help him in playing with quality up top? Or is this maybe an avenue to selling him at the end of this season by getting the next player ready to come in? So all of that's pretty interesting on his front end with Jonathan David. It's just gotten better and better the last 4 weeks. And it's not just the goals. And the goal yesterday against Bordeaux was kind of, you know, a great finish, easy finish, but late in the game, they're already up. It's that when you watch, he is dictating so much of what they do. And everyone picks their head up with the ball and they're trying to find his feet. And he's starting to find pockets in the channels off the center forward area where he's more comfortable and can sometimes turn and run. Sometimes it's a layoff, a 1-2 like the goal yesterday, where I think at the beginning of the season, he felt like he had to be this target forward that was always in the box, that was always at the edge of play, and he wasn't getting touches. And so he wasn't affecting the game like he was in Belgium last year. So he looks more comfortable. This team's leading, and he hasn't really gotten going, and he's their record signing. And so this year could still end exactly how you wanted it to, which is he is the highest commodity in Ligue 1. He has led Lille to a level that they've never really been to before, I guess since Eden Hazard maybe. So all of that could still happen, and yet he's had a struggle for the first few months. So that's positive going forward for Canadians.
We talked about experts. We're going to talk to Greg Berhalter in just 1 second, but I am salivating at the prospect of U.S.-Canada. I mean, honestly, just anything, please. Just U.S. anything in CONCACAF at this point. World Cup qualifying is just going to be a breath of fresh air for me. But U.S.-Canada in particular has me extremely excited. Let's do it now. An AT&T call to the field. Greg Berhalter, the manager of the U.S. national team. Greg, welcome to Extra Time.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's just jump into it. Yeah, it's great to see you too. I know that I feel giddy right now, and it's a good feeling when I think about and talk about the national team and sort of imagine where we were, honestly, 3.5 years ago or so. You have your hands in this dough. Every day you're thinking about it. You're working with the guys when you can. You're communicating. You're playing a lot of different roles. When you see your player pool, when you think about maybe what you've learned and how it's developed over these couple years, what stands out to you? Strengths, weaknesses, what you've really played towards, you know, the length of your depth charts growing, the players breaking in. What gets you excited?
You know, I think I would summarize it in one word, and that word would be progress. You know, when you think about what we've been doing collectively and then individually, you know, there's been a lot of progress in the player pool in these last 18 months. And I think that's exciting. You know, when you think about some of the steps our younger players have taken, it's impressive. And when you start to think about the talent that we're amassing and now how we're moving together as a group, I think it could be a good team. And that's exciting.
When you look at the depth and you look at the year that you have coming up, and maybe it was too quiet of a year last year. Now you got a lot of work coming forward, tournaments, qualifying, all this stuff. What do you have, you know, an AB team? Do you have different groups and they can fit together in different ways? How do you see all of this that we just type about on Twitter?
Yeah. You know, I think it's going to be challenging the year, but I think what it comes down to is everything is going to be done to prepare for World Cup qualifying. So, you know, when we have March friendlies, we have the Nations League in June, and we'll probably work some type of cadence where we have a third game added to the back end of the Nations League, just to have that cadence of World Cup qualifying. Then we have Gold Cup. And then it's going to be about evaluating a bunch of players to prepare for, you know, the fall, because it's going to be a difficult fall. You have to imagine the guys are going to be traveling across from Europe, some of them, and then playing on Thursday, Sunday, and Wednesday, having three games in that window. It's going to be interesting.
So I know you're thinking about this stuff holistically. I watch your group play, and obviously watching Columbus. And one of the things I've seen, I think, the last few games is off the ball, pressing a little higher, more energy. We could hear it from you in Orlando through the microphones throughout. And you talked about that energy. Is that the progression of your time coaching and having more time with the players? Is it something you see in the pool, something you see maybe for CONCACAF World Cup qualifying? What's led to that development?
Yeah, no, I think it's reflective of the player pool. You know, we have some really good athletes. You're talking about high-end athletes. And when you give these guys, you know, the ability to use their strengths, I think it can be really effective. You know, part of the mentality of the group is being aggressive, being on the front foot, wanting to win the ball in the opponent's half. And we've seen that, you know, throughout the last fall and now through these last games. So that's an important aspect that we've been focusing on. And, you know, just to give the team another dimension that we haven't had yet.
Mm-hmm. When you look at the team that you had in January camp, and then you think about all these guys that, as you said, will come in from Europe, do you have in your mind right now a first team? Do you have a group where you're saying, this is who I think, come World Cup qualifying, will be that group? Or is it very much still an open competition across the board?
You know, it's been fun because I've been asked that a number of times over these last couple of weeks, and I've had more time to think about the answer. But, you know, what I'd say is we probably have, you know, a group of 18 players that we're really comfortable with. But it also is dependent on form, dependent on performance, dependent on health. And, you know, all that with the national team, like it's never in a state of finality. It's always open, right? Because you never know if the players are going to be fit, if they're going to be in form or any of that. So I think for the players, I think the best message for the players when it comes to the national team is they have to continually prove themselves and you know, to be part of the group. No one spot is should be taken for granted.
One of the things we've obviously seen and heard was talked about in the camp is so many players moving to Europe from Major League Soccer. We know you have a part in kind of helping rendezvous those players into these clubs. We know you communicate constantly with clubs in Europe and obviously played there yourself. From your point of view, what's the perception like for these players? Obviously, for example, a Brian Reynolds move, unprecedented. What are you hearing from scouts, from clubs, from coaches in Europe about MLS developed young players?
Well, it's starting to change, and we're starting to be looked at around the world as a value league, which I think is important. You know, before we might have been ignored for our young talent, but it's been a combination of our huge efforts in youth development, and then it's been coaches having the courage to play young players, and then it's been young players doing well abroad. And that's been, you know, the combination of those three things has really led to a lot of attention on Major League Soccer and on our younger players. You know, we're getting calls all the time. And I think it's a great spot for the league to be in. Like, this is a really good position. You always want to be a league that other countries look for young talent. And, you know, we've done a good job of, or MLS has done a great job of establishing itself in this last year.
I've been thinking about the idea of golden generation, so to speak, versus first wave. And to me, this feels like a first wave that, and maybe that's just like my positivity, my hopefulness in this game of that this is just the beginning. We're just starting to sort of see the first big tangible rewards. You know, you were at Columbus, you saw this, you were part of building that process out. You're now in this position. With that sort of like background in mind, what do you think about the idea between golden generation and first wave of talent? And if it's first wave, where could we go with this thing?
Yeah, you know, I think that it certainly needs to be sustained. You know, I think we need to double down now on youth development. We need to put a lot more energy, a lot more resources into it to make sure that it is a first wave and that we can continue to produce these young players at the rate we are now. But I think, you know, when you look at the collective effort over the last 15 years, you know, and you're starting to see results, it's gratifying. And, you know, I hope, as you say, that it is a first wave and not a golden generation.
Let's talk about some of the first wave guys. Weston McKennie, yeah. We had you on the show a few months back, and you talked about his development, and a lot of it was get in the box, be goal dangerous, be more on the front foot in that final third. I've seen a lot of that at Juve. I'm sure you have. What have you taken from his progression? What have the conversations been like with him maybe over the last few months?
You know, Weston's an unbelievable talent. And, you know, it's good that he's getting this opportunity to showcase his skills because he has, you know, unique qualities. Yeah, he's a pleasure to work with. really athletic, really good closing down space, has a knack for arriving in the penalty box, as you mentioned. And I think these skill sets and his, you know, his work rate, you know, make him an integral part of what Juventus is doing. And, you know, we've been watching him closely, and he's been doing a great job.
Has it changed how you think you would use him?
No, I think, you know, we've been using him, you know, when you look now, if they play 4-4-2 and he's on the right, he's coming inside to receive the ball anyway. And it's almost like how we use him as an attacking midfielder. You know, part of that, you know, it's we have a defensive midfielder and then we have two attacking midfielders, and he does that role really well. You see for us, he arrives in the penalty box. He's been scoring goals. You know, he's been doing a similar role.
Christian Pulisic said in an interview with Chelsea the other day about Thomas Tuchel that maybe a little bit of a false nine might be in his future. How do you think about him as a false nine? We just saw David Ferreira doing that to incredible effect in January camp. Oh, my God. I did that last time. I'm living in former MVP FC Dallas David Ferreira's world. I know, man. It's a different generation. I got to get my mind in the right spot. But Jesus was incredible. It was awesome to see him have that moment, and we hope he gets to build on it. But when Christian says something like that, and as you watch his progress at Chelsea, what do you think about that situation for him, but also about where you'll be using him, as you said, in these sort of make-or-break World Cup qualifiers?
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure out why we're calling it a false nine, you know?
Tell us what to call it.
Well, to me, it's interesting. I think, you know, there's moments where we're certainly using him to drop down and create an advantage in midfield, but then he has the responsibility to arrive in the penalty box. And when you look at his movement behind the back line, you look about how he's getting on the end of crosses. I mean, he's very much leading the attack when it comes to in the penalty box. So, you know, I'm not completely sold on the false nine terminology for that. But what I'd say is Christian, you know, he's another player with a really unique skill set, and the ability for him to beat players and get the ball at his feet and unbalance the defense is top class. And, you know, I could see Chelsea wanting to use him in a way that he can do that. You know, I'm not sure. I'd have to see how it works out. I'm not sure how it would be in the penalty box. Him, you know, he does arrive. He's usually the accent runner when it comes to arriving in the penalty box. He does a great job of finding that cutback space. If you see him come in from the left side of the field, he's always arriving at the penalty spot. Does a really good job of that. So it's going to be fun to see it. You know, I think it will be interesting to see how they use him. I'm excited to watch the game today.
So we brought up Jesus and that January camp. You're there for a month. We're not. We just saw the game at the end. What did we miss? What did you see throughout the training, throughout the weeks that, you know, stuck out to you?
I think we had 38 players in camp. So it was a huge camp. It was a mix between the U23s and the senior team. And what really impressed me the most was the mindset of the older guys and how they led by example. And, you know, it's difficult. You guys have to imagine we're in a bubble type of atmosphere where you can't leave the hotel. You can't interact with people from the outside world. And you're there for, you know, over 3 weeks. And it's challenging. But the guys did a great job with staying positive, being focused for training, you know, enjoying the time together off the field. And, you know, and I credit the older guys for just bringing it every single day and training hard every single day. And it rubs off. And you can see that the younger players, you know, some of them, you know, as we're talking after dinner with the group, you know, they're using guys like Sebastian Leggett as examples of like the hardest workers on the team. And that's all you can ask from the older guys is that they set that example for the rest of the group.
Josie Altidore didn't get to play. I was sad about that. I want to see Josie in the national team. I want to see him play in a major tournament before he goes. But I look at your forward pool and it's just deep and getting deeper, it seems. Now, there's some unprovenness there, but you have options all the way down. How do you think about that forward line as you watch a Matthew Hoppe break out, as you see a Daryl Dike in camp and now go out on loan, as you sort of see those numbers grow and have more options in front of you?
That's a good question. You know, I think that time will tell. I think it's a process. You know, we need to start playing better teams to really test the guys. You know, I think that we did a great job against, you know, a weak Trinidad team. And, you know, we need to test ourselves. And hopefully we'll play better competition in March in Europe. And then we know that the competition in June will be good. You know, we're finalizing some games now and with the Nations League semifinals and hopefully finals will be good competition. But that's what this group needs because, you know, right now I think we're speculating, over theory, right? We haven't seen Matthew in the national team yet. You know, some of the other guys, we just need to play better competition to really show what this group is about.
Wanted to finish you up on Jordan Morris. We didn't see in January camp, obviously. Moving overseas, we know you've talked with Swansea's coaching staff and have a lot invested in Jordan being a part of the national team. Daryl Dike as well, who got mentioned going on loan. What do you see from those two moves and, you know, their career paths going forward? Obviously, they're both in very different places right now.
You know, it'll be interesting for Jordan. You know, this is something he really wanted. Seattle was supportive of it. And, you know, the team is right in the middle of a promotion battle. And those are high stakes, and it'll be interesting to see how he does. You know, they play with five in the back, almost like a 5-2-1-2. I think he's going to be used as a forward. So it'll be interesting to see how he interprets that. And hopefully they can get him moving behind the back line, stretching the opponent, and then arriving in the penalty box and hopefully scoring some goals. So we're excited to see that. You know, Paul's there as well. Yep. Be interesting to see if they use Paul as a wing back, which, you know, we can project that probably. You know, I think Paul is a tremendous player. He gives you a lot of verticality as a winger, really helps stretch the defense, good timing behind the back line. You know, he really did a good job in camp. And then with Daryl at Barnsley, you know, he's still learning the position. He's still learning exactly how to play as a number nine. And I think when you get him in camp, you start trying to project how he can be best used in your group. You know, very strong, good in the penalty box, can get quick shots off, you know, can certainly play back to goal, is less of stretching the back line than a guy like Jesus, less dropping in than a guy like Jesus. So it's just about the coaching staff figuring out how to best use him for the team and himself to be successful. So we're excited to follow that progress.
We've joked in the past, Greg, about listening on your guys' scouting calls. I wonder if that's still on the table, but I also wonder, as I have my setup here to mainline soccer all day long, as we see your beautiful art collection in the background, how do you do this? Like, we're all working from home, we're working in weird surroundings. Like, do you have a TV room? Do you have like a big whiteboard in your house? How's this working?
I have a tactics board. I don't know if you can see the tactics board right under the stairs right there.
Hidden away.
Yeah, that's always that. But no, I just watch it in the living room or in the family room. I have the TV where I put the games on. We get all the games, so that's great to see. You know, it's fun, especially with these midweek games. But one thing I think about is just all the games these guys are playing, man. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. It seems like it's Saturday, Wednesday for months on end. And, you know, I can imagine the guys, you know, are certainly fatigued at this stage.
How do you then, this is the last one, I swear. How do you then balance that as the national team coach when you bring them in for whether it's a January camp, but I think more importantly throughout this year, and you're asking them for their best. You know, we need your best. There is urgency here. There's huge stakes. You're living in the same world that we are all living in, which is a very difficult, different one. How do you, throughout this year, as you think about things outside of maybe what you can control in some ways, get the best from your team in this different world that we live in?
No, it's a great point, because what you're saying is absolutely true. When they come in, you know, the national team is about winning, right? It's about results. It's about qualifying, doing well at the World Cup, you know, these type of things. And there's really no room, you know, to say, okay, you know, we can perform at 50% this game. Having said that, it's just being mindful of the players and their time. And, you know, one thing I can guarantee you is that a guy like Christian Pulisic is not going to be playing Nations League and Gold Cup. It's not going to happen, right? I mean, these guys need a break. So I can imagine them playing one of those tournaments and then getting rest. And that's going to be true for a lot of our guys who are going through similar situations right now.
Difficult mix this year. Looking forward to seeing how it all comes together. Hoping to see our guys in the Olympics as well. Greg, thank you so much for your time. As always, let you get back to that tactics board, all right?
Thanks, guys. Have a good day.
Always appreciate Greg's time. What did we take away from that little chat? A little update for us. What sticks out in your mind?
I thought there was a few little things he said that I hadn't heard before, you know, right at the end saying, kind of guaranteeing a lot of guys wouldn't play both competitions in Nation League as Gold Cup for rest and how rotate. I just think feeling from him the singularity of the focus of World Cup qualifying, which makes sense. But I haven't felt it yet, and we're still a little distance away. And actually, for me, watching the Club World Cup this morning and seeing it in a Qatar stadium, you were like, oh, yeah, this is a thing that's happening. And I guess everything's like that in life right now. But just to hear that and feel that is, okay, this entire year, everything is about the first starting lineup for the first game of World Cup qualifying come the fall. And I thought that was interesting to feel it come off of it.
Yeah, and but that's as it should be, right? And like just watching it, I was able, like there was a different level of intensity. And I don't want to say evasiveness to his answers because he's very good about being forthright, but like he was not, he was clearly not ready to dive down a 30-minute tactics hole with us, which he has happily done in the past. And I like, it makes sense. This is a World Cup qualifying year. I thought the discussion about the false nine was interesting in how he described Ferreira and to, and that would be Jesus Ferreira, Weeby.
Oh my God, it's a bad habit. I don't know what it is.
So the difference for Greg in terms of how he sees it is like, do the center forwards that he's using occupy space or occupy defenders? And I think that with the way his team has generally played, it's been more about occupying or finding space, which Jossi Zardes is really, really good at. Like he just understands the patterns of the game. It's why he scores a million tap-in goals a year. It's why he is kind of the default center forward for the team. Jesus Ferreira was wonderful at it. Ayo Akinola, I thought, was great at that for Toronto FC during the season, and then in that friendly last or 2 months ago now against El Salvador. Daryl Dike isn't yet at that level. He's more about putting his back into a defender or even sometimes facing up, keeping a guy on his hip. So it, like, even without like 100% answering it, or in this case picking apart the question, he kind of revealed how he sees some of the center forward pool or how he thinks of the center forward. And I would say that for Josh Sargent, it's the same thing as Daryl Dike. They are more about occupying the center backs rather than finding space off the ball. And for those two guys who I still think are the two highest upside young center forwards in the pool, I'm sure that they are getting very specific feedback on here's where you need to go. Here's how you need to get there. Here's how you shape your run. If you look at the run that Ferreira made on the final assist he had, the one where he croys it and cuts back to the trailing to Areola, like watch how he loops that run out. I'm not sure I see that from Josh Sargent, and I'm not sure I see that from Daryl Dike yet. But as he said at the top of the interview, the word for the past 2 years has been progress, and we've seen it with the player pool and we've seen it with individual players. And I don't doubt that we'll see it from these two young center forwards as well.
So the other thing that's interesting is his progress, because I don't think you looked at it and said, wow, Jesus Ferreira is playing so unconventional, but it was unconventional to the way we had seen forwards play in a Greg Berhalter team for the last 10 years. And so that's what's interesting. And then I asked him about the press and he said it as well. And I think that's what I'm excited about. And you always knew he was flexible. I mean, the way he played in playoff games to win was the ultimate level of flexibility for a manager who had clear ideas of his philosophy of the game. But now you're seeing it long-term with a player pool that's his, that he's comfortable with, that he's going to manipulate into the team he wants. And I think in both of those ways, it's exciting as a fan to see he's got his pulse on what these players can do, how they're comfortable, and sort of building a culture of like, what is the U.S. men's national team going to stand for in 2 years, in 3 years? When they step on the field in a Gold Cup final, what are other teams expecting? What do the fans see? And I don't think we've had that for a while. And he feels like has an idea of how he wants it to look and what fits these players.
Let's talk roster builds. If you haven't checked them out already, head over to MLSsoccer.com or the MLS app. Our own armchair analyst, Matt Doyle, has all the roster build updates on the Eastern and Western Conference teams, aka the entire league. That is a slog. I have written things like that before, and it's a lot. There's a lot of information to sort of synthesize quickly and give to people. It has not been the busiest of off seasons, but there's been plenty to talk about. Let's just start with Sporting Kansas City. Keep it in the Western Conference, I think. Sporting Kansas City went out and signed a center back. We knew they needed to do that. Nicholas Izmamirin out of, well, am I pronouncing it with like the Turkish way or the French way? I don't know.
It's 100%
yeah, but he's been
French,
at but he's been at Besiktas. So you, then he was at PSV before that.
4 years. You don't change the way Weeby is pronounced.
I might. Look, 29 years old. Maybe this is a Ligue 1 issue. Maybe it's just a playing time issue for him. Either way, he has a ton of experience. Was a part of some really good PSV teams. Won some titles there. They need to get their scouting right with center backs. I'm not going to sit here and tell you I know much about this guy at all, other than sort of his resume. But these are tests for them. They're also being linked back to Argentina for another center back as well. And they went and got a central midfielder who they think is a starter too. Dave, what do you think about this roster build right now? The losses, maybe Gerso, the gains, maybe Gutierrez. I haven't heard they came to an agreement with him yet. But
yeah.
Even Alan Pulido, healthy for a season, is a gain.
I think if you went into the offseason and said, here's the list of what SKC needs to do, they've hit on a decent amount of it already, and they didn't have that much work to do. They needed to improve center back. They go out and they get an in his prime center back. Didn't play with Besiktas, so hasn't played soccer in about 6 months, which is always a question mark. And when you're SKC and you're looking for guys who are available on frees and not on a contract, there's always a question mark. That's why it exists. The question, though, is can you get great value? And they have in the past, and they've missed sometimes in the past. So that's always going to be there. And I think that's why you see it's Nicolas Gannetti down at Vélez Sarsfield, 27-year-old Argentine center back who was at the Olympics in 2016, has been at Vélez his whole life. That's the rumor for what they're going for now. That might even be a DP-level center back, which for this team would make sense. They got Remy Walter as well on a free, who's 25 years old. They think is a starting number six in this league. Could be a number eight, so gives you flexibility, gives you ground coverage, which they just haven't had in central midfield, and could be a guy for the future if Busio's leaving and other guys are starting to get pushed out the door at an older age, and Roger, and we don't know about Ely as well. So I think they took care of a lot of that. You mentioned it. Having Pulido for a year, even having Pulido go into Mexico camps and not having to sit out for 10 days or 2 weeks every time he comes back, if that's the possibility, that would be an improvement for them. I think they feel more comfortable with a lot of the pieces getting older, and Jalen Lindsay and Busio as well. Gadi Kinda, another year in the league, you should see better. So the only thing left for them is the Gerso Fernandez replacement. They gave Gerso a contract offer. He didn't accept it. He wants to leave. So they need someone who's dangerous individually on the wings. I think Kyrie Shelton can connect play. And if you start him, it's not a negative, but he's not goal dangerous and he's not creative on his own. 1v1, and that's the one piece they're looking for. But that's a piece you can find because you're asking for one skill set. You're not asking for a stud. Johnny Russell is that guy on the other side. He does everything for you. You don't need a designated player. You don't need Nico Lodero. You don't need Pedro Santos. You just need one piece left. And I think SKC looks better going into next season than they were coming out of last season.
When will they do that is the question. And will they do that? I think that's an open question too, because they have Shelton. I know what you're going to say about Daniel Shallowy last year was not the best, but he has shown signs. And they have some young cats back behind that they signed out of the academy that they think can be something. Those eventually have to hit the field. But I do think that's the one spot. And maybe that's a summer spot. Maybe that's not a now spot. But we do know that Peter Vermees is pretty good at finding deals. You know, I even think back to like a Christian Namath, you know, a guy that had sort of a resume and a pedigree, but didn't have an opportunity. They gave it to him. They got a transfer fee out of it. I'm not going to say that's what's going to happen with a center back, but these are opportunities for them to go out and find guys like that. Now, look, like Andreu Fontas was kind of a guy like that. So it doesn't always work out. But I think with the strength of their squad, and remember, we are talking about the best record in the Western Conference last year. You can talk all about schedules and everything else when you bring that in. But this is still a team that went out and got a lot of results last year.
What's interesting to me is it doesn't have to be outside the league, too. It could have been a Michael Barrios. It could have been a guy like that who was proven in this league. And so I think if you only have one hole like that, you give yourself time to wait for the deal to come, to wait for a contract negotiation that goes wrong at another team and a guy's available, or someone comes in and plays well, and now the guy underneath him is available or someone overseas as well who's unhappy. So I think it gives them that flexibility to not have to rush into making one of these moves.
And if you get a DP center back or just two new center backs that you think are going to be better than what you had, a lot of your problems are solved. Anyway, let's talk about a team with holes. Many, many holes, Doyle. So FC Steve. Cincinnati. Jurgen Locadia. Reports out there, our own Tommy Bogert, Tommy Scoops, among many, many others, saying that this could be it for Locadia, depending on how things go. A lot of teams are interested in him, apparently, in Europe, and Brighton has a decision to make. FC Cincinnati has a decision to make, because I think their loan goes through the summer. What would you do with Jurgen Locadia if you're FC Cincinnati, and what do you see when you look at their depth chart and their offseason so far?
So I would pray for someone to show a ton of interest in Jurgen Locadia and for the loan to be cut short, because he came here with a big reputation despite middling or poor numbers in the Premier League, but he was pretty decent in the Bundesliga, and he just fell on his face last year. One goal in about 1400 minutes. It was not the ROI that you want from a DP. It's not the ROI that you want from any type of center forward. So you kind of hope that somebody takes him off your hands, and it kind of sounds like that's what's happening, because Gerard Niekamp last week on a media call, when listing the team's offseason priorities, he said number 10 is a priority, winger is a priority, center back is a priority, and number 9 is a priority. And by including Locadia in that, it kind of gives up the game. It kind of lets you know that what is happening there. What happens next after he goes? It's a very good question. It is also well past time for FC Cincinnati to start getting some of these signings right, because Locadia was he sort of failed so hard that it overshadowed just how ineffective Yuya Kubo was. And he was another DP signing last year. Sim DeJong played 700 minutes, didn't have a goal or an assist. He wasn't DP, but he was a TAM signing. Like, these guys are like, they opened up the checkbook 2 years in a row, and almost none of it has worked out. So that's why when Niekamp was speaking in the media and he listed priorities, he basically listed every position except left back, because they did the right thing in getting Ronald Matarrita, and central midfield, where they have Frankie Amaya and Matocho and Alan Cruz, three guys who should be able to work together pretty decently. But it's a should. It's not even we know they will. Cincinnati hasn't shown any we know they will work together well over the course of their 2 years in MLS. They just have so much work to do.
Center back, 10, wing, striker. Like, these are the hardest positions to fill.
So I was actually surprised that he listed the wing, because they signed Barrial last year, who's a young attacking player who they obviously have a lot of high hopes for. And then they drafted Calvin Harris, number 2, when Mayaka was still on the board. Like, if you have young players like that, like, I understand saying, yeah, we need to add another winger or two, but those are the types of talents that you would want to see a team that's kind of in rebuilding mode, as Cincinnati are for the third straight year, want to go forward with and try to build around and put them in a position where they can soak up a lot of minutes, learn on the fly, and hopefully by the time the second half of the year comes, be able to be like high-level producers.
You guys see this stuff from Tenorio and others at The Athletic about Frankie Amaya?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what is it, 1.2 million?
Yeah, a bit of seven figures from some Eastern Conference teams, from some good teams. That would have been a big haul. That would have been a Darlington Nagby-esque haul. And maybe that says something about where the internal trade market has gone from Nagby until now, that things have maybe, the prices have risen a little bit. You'll win an MLS Cup with a player, that helps. But Frankie Amaya does not have the pedigree, the ability, the proven sort of professional nature that Nagby does. But he has huge upside. And I can see why Frankie Amaya might be like, yes, please do that, because I'm at a critical stage in my development. And I'm not sure that given the state of the roster and the state of the project that I'm going to be able to maximize said development. What can they do for Frankie Amaya? Like, ultimately, they got to win games. But this is, as we talk about on so many other things, like, you got Frankie Amaya as an asset, and right now that asset is not performing the way that
It's not, but it's clearly appreciating.
That's fair.
A draft pick, and 2 years later, you know, you're able to say no to offers above, you know, in the seven figures of allocation cash. Like, okay, something's gone right. And the fact is, Amaya is a really good two-way player. If you watch him play, there's, you know, shades of Ozzy Alonso and his toughness, his ability to win the ball and then distribute and be tough in terms of not getting knocked off the ball. So I understand that their decision to say no to that and perceive him as a building block. But we all know the direction MLS is heading. We talked to Greg about it, that this is, you know, MLS is becoming a selling league. And maybe they see Frankie Amaya as someone who they could sell overseas for, you know, well into seven figures.
And I think that's the also the interesting, unique part of MLS is he's on a Generation Adidas contract as a domestic player for them. So you talk about a ton of allocation, but it's hard to find domestic players to use that on. And this is already a team that's saddled with a lot of foreign contracts, which, okay, on the one hand, you could use that allocation to buy guys down and create space. On the other hand, is Frankie Amaya's status in your team now, and then that future value to sell overseas for a club that doesn't have an academy to first team pipeline set up yet, so you don't know when the next sale after that will really be coming, is that more valuable to them than whatever that allocation is, which I think is the fun part for these MLS GMs of they're kind of in, you know, I'm almost about to get stuck in a weeby, like 18. What,
this isn't, I'm not the only one who does this. Stop making this a me thing.
Time driven by Continental where weeby messes up.
Yeah. All these words. I'm surrounded by wordsmiths. It's like Shakespeare, you know, clones sitting around here, just spinning perfect idioms. No. Look, Cincinnati got some work to do. And I think if you're Frankie Amaya, you're looking around saying, what work is coming? Like, I want to be in a team where I can perform at my best. And that applies to the entire team. That applies to the fan base. That applies to the front office. They're all trying to build something that can be sustainable and win. And right now, you look at that, you look at the roster, and it's hard to see it. It really is. How about the biggest offseason winner so far? Let's just bring it up a notch. A little positivity here. Doyle, who's your winner of this offseason so far? I wrote a column at MLSsoccer.com giving my three. Sounders fans somehow got frustrated by that.
If it's not about Sounders fans, then it's bad content.
Fair.
Like, that's just.
So this was really. So
how could a team that has zero starting wingers right now?
Extremely poor content.
In the offseason.
That's Shandon Hapia erasure right there.
Well, yeah, look, you know, you really got to drag FC Dallas for selling right backs when you've lost all yours. So, who's your winner, Doyle?
LAFC. Just for two reasons. Well, I guess three reasons. One, they signed a starting right back in Kim Moon-Won, who I think, you know, certainly looks the, if you look at his resume, he looks the part of a guy who's going to do well in MLS. Two, they got Jesus Maria back permanently. And it was night and day once he came last year. Like, they looked like the 2019 version of LAFC with him in the back line. And three, they opened up a DP slot. And, you know, Brian Rodriguez was really good, but he's not going to start over Carlos Vela, and he's not going to start over Diego Rossi. And if you have him there, then it means you got to play one of those two guys out of position at center forward. Well, right now, the center forward depth chart is Danny Musovski and Corey Baird, which pretty good young players, or not even young, but pretty good players. But I think the real starter at center forward for LAFC is open DP slot. And I think that with the solidity that they showed in CONCACAF Champions League, with, you know, Carlos Vela rested and uninjured, and Diego Rossi coming back, and that whole central midfield coming back, upgrades at both fullback slots, like, this team has the ability, like, they've had a really, really, really good offseason, and having that open DP slot makes them absolutely terrifying going forward.
Because Doyle mentioned upgrade at both fullback spots, because they also traded for Marco Farfan, which is a homegrown, young potential. They gave up basically nothing for him with the way the trades are going. But I'm surprised you said winner, Doyle, because they did the Brian Rodriguez thing go the way they wanted? Like, or does that not matter because you think they're better on the field next year than they are?
Yeah, so, I mean, it definitely didn't go the way they wanted. But
by the way, we haven't even said the details here. He's on loan to Almeria in the second division in Spain. they are pushing for promotion. So there is a role to be played to get into La Liga in this sense, but it is not, I would say, really in it's any not, way, the profile that we expected from a guy who, though he struggled to put the ball in the back of the net himself, was a standout in a lot of ways. And also is at the national team level for a national team in Uruguay that tends to put players in places that are not the second division in Spain.
Let's talk about LAFC in this signing. This wasn't like, oh, this is a young prospect. They spent big money on him.
Yeah.
So they spent more on him than UD Almería has ever spent on a player to bring him in. So that's the part where it's like kind of mind blowing the way this transfer has gone so far.
I agree. I was surprised by that, and like it's not what they were hoping for, I would guess. But honestly, just opening up the DP slot is such a win, and it gives them the chance to like I think that going for Rodriguez when they did, I totally respect it. But I think that signing him instead of spending $8 million on a proven Raul Ruiz Diaz type striker might have cost them a couple of trophies. Well, now they have that DP slot open again, and they have the opportunity to go out on the market, whether it's this transfer window or waiting till the summer, and add a massive piece. Like we talked about Kun Aguero last week. Like maybe it'll be someone like that. Maybe it'll be someone of a lower profile. But I expect them to go out and try to get a long-term, you know, a number nine who they're not going to try to flip and sell to somewhere in Europe 2 years from now.
Yes. Seed the Kun Aguero move. Just seed it. Those seeds. Plant the seeds. Fertilize. Water. Yeah, we'll see what happens. Maybe this is why BWP moved on. You know, we loved what he did, and he seemed to really succeed in that system, but maybe the writing was not just on the wall, but like, hey, this is our plan, and so this is what you would have to fit into, and maybe he just didn't. So going to Columbus is the right move for him. We shall see. Who you got, Dave? Who's your winner?
Well, I was going to mention SKC, so we already did that, so I don't have to. So I'm going to go down the road from our big question mark in Cincinnati and go to Columbus, which I think is a simple one of they won MLS Cup. They won MLS Cup with a deep team, and they've just made it deeper. Win now mode, but probably not handicapping them going forward. BWP coming in is a huge one. Kevin Molino, the deal makes so much sense because if it hits, you're awesome. And if it doesn't, you're the same team that just won MLS Cup. So you can take that risk when other clubs couldn't, and you were there in that conversation, which is just smart to be around these things. They're bringing back Vito Wormgoor, who barely played because he got hurt, I think, in the first game of the MLS's back tournament, who they thought was a starting center back coming in last year, and he's in his 30s, but still, that's more depth at center back. They brought in Perry Kitchen, which I don't love because I want to see Aiden Morris and
Special but Bell Megan loves the Evan Bush signing.
Yeah, for sure, but it's still more depth. So right now, the only hole is a backup fullback, which you can get done whenever you get done, but outside of that, I think we should be talking about a team, and we don't know what the calendar will totally look like, that can win CCL. That's what we're talking about with this Columbus group that can repeat an MLS Cup, and that's pretty exciting.
There's a couple things about this. One of them, like, I mean, Evan Bush and Perry Kitchen, like, the connections there are pretty obvious. Like, you're going straight back to the Ohio and Akron well for Caleb Porter. So he has both injury insurance, leadership, MLS experience, and quality to push into the lineup in places like, look, they had the injuries in the playoffs. I'll share a goalkeeper. This would have been a nice piece to have in Evan Bush, a longtime starter. Not saying Tarbell didn't do a good job, but like would have been this is now that piece to push in there if something happens. The other side is you just have to give Tim Bezpachinko and, you know, everybody involved in that front office, Pat Onstad and of course Caleb Porter as well, props for what they did when they walked in to get the cap space in the right space to build a team that could win MLS Cup, that could then in that offseason go out and make signings like these and also eat the inevitable bonuses that come and make your cap situation difficult after you win something in this way. To even put yourself in the position to be able to do this and defend your MLS Cup in this way, I mean, that deserves a lot of praise as well. So I think absolutely crew are winners. I'm going to throw FC Dallas out there. I don't know how they wouldn't be winners. They went out and got what they think are maybe 2.5 starters, one at center back, guy in La Liga that, you know, helped Granada come up from the second division, got about 20 starts in their first year when they surprised everybody in La Liga, but then went back to Eibar and just fell off the map with them, was never going to play. So he's sort of a, I'm not going to say distressed asset, but a guy who wasn't getting playing time, who's 27, who now comes in and will be a starter for Rito Ziegler. They re-signed Bresson. You can say whatever you want about that, but good depth quality there. They've got the winger in Hyder O'Brien, who scored a ton of goals in Colombia. Is it a wild card foreign sign? Yeah, in a lot of ways it is. But let's say he's like early Michael Barrios. Boom, you're good to go. Vargas is an experiment on the left wing. Got a ton of time professionally so far in Venezuela. But more importantly, they just sold Brian Reynolds. They had an inflection point for their academy. Reggie Cannon was a great move for them. But Reggie Cannon did not net them potentially eight figures from a guy who played like 16 first team games. Like, they just put a marker in the sand this offseason. And you can argue about what that means for their first team. I would argue that they'll probably just reload and be fine. They have a lot of the other pieces. The big question now is what they do with the money that they got from that. Clark and Dan Hunt said they're going to plow it back into the club. I want to know what that means. And John Arnold will answer that in just a second. But I think Dallas has been building toward this point, the Brian Reynolds point, for like a decade. And they got there. And now it's a question of what do they do from here? They've got the pipeline to Bayern. They've got Justin Che going over there. They'll probably get sell on from him. They'll get sell on from Chris Richards. They'll have start having all these players be sort of tentacles for them out into the world market. And remember, Weston McKennie is one of them, despite the fact that he did not sign a first-team deal. He was developed in part in that academy. It's a huge win for FC Dallas. But the question is, what do they do on the field now? Can they take a step forward as a first team or as what they've been, which is competitive, you know, a thorn in people's sides in the playoffs, but not necessarily a title-winning team, though that 2016 team did win the double. And a lot of this was sort of really bubbling under the surface at that time. I personally can't see how Dallas are not a winner, but I had a lot of people tell me that they weren't, and I'm stupid for thinking so. But no, this Dallas is an amazing – it's amazing offseason for them.
No, they're obviously the winners. Anytime you flip a homegrown kid for close to $10 million, you've done really well. They were able to get some – old and underperforming contracts off the books and get a little younger and more exciting and on the wing. And then, I mean, the big thing is they need their DPs to perform at a DP level. And that's the difference between, you know, who won the offseason and who won the season. And FC Dallas over the past 5 years, basically since Mauro Diaz, their DPs have underdelivered. Right now, the only DPs on the roster are Frank O'Hara and Brian Acosta. Neither is a guaranteed starter. They might be bringing in another DP winger in Carlos De Peña from
Dynamo Kiev.
Dynamo Kiev, thank you. And the hope would be that he is the guy who could put them over the top. But some of this also is going to fall on Luchi Gonzalez. Like we have seen for 2 years now, Luchi's team really does well playing from back to front and getting into the final third. Once they get into the final third, they lack those kill patterns and they don't generate a ton of chances. But it's a great offseason from FC Dallas. And anyone who says otherwise to you, Weeby, is probably our producer.
He is a Sounders fan as well. The other thing with Dallas is every offseason, it's which homegrowns are going to take that big step. Somebody probably will. And you have Ferreira and you have Pomichael trying to bounce back from rough 2020s. Could they be what they were in 2019? If they are, this team's going to take a huge step forward. All right, let's talk to somebody with more expertise on FC Dallas and soccer in Texas than all of us. The Striker Texas is live. It is John Arnold. Arnold, John. What's up, man? How's it going? Congratulations on the new venture.
Thank you. It's been a long time coming. We've been trying to get this new site covering soccer in Texas from the MLS level all the way down, trying to get it launched for a while. So it's like when you get, you guys know how it is, when you launch a creative project and you get it out in the world, you're just like, there it is. So hopefully people are enjoying. Hopefully people will like it. And there's always plenty to talk about in Texas, as you guys know, and as we'll get into. So it should be fun, and hopefully will help kind of raise the profile even more of soccer and MLS in the state.
This is where the work begins, yeah? All right. Let's pay attention. I'm pretty sure that you have some stuff on the side about one Brian Reynolds, who we've been talking about here. Right. We've gone over the transfer side. Like, that's done and dusted. It's over. It happened. Now comes the side for FC Dallas where they have to figure out what comes next, whether that is with the money that comes into the coffers via Brian Reynolds and their academy as well, because this next up mindset is something that they figure has to be churning forever, basically, at this point. The Hunt said in that post-conference after the transfer that they're going to reinvest in the club. They're going to plow it back in. What happens now, John?
That was the word that Clark Hunt used, was plow. And I thought that was interesting because that really is like an active word that makes it seem like we are going to use this money. And then, of course, as basically every time that FC Dallas ownership, Clark or Dan Hunt, speaks to the press, he was asked, will you bring in someone like Chicharito? Will you bring in someone like, with more MLS success, Carlos Vela? Will you bring in a star, right? Or even, and this wasn't on the call, but like even I think FC Dallas fans for a long time have said, will you bring in a Raul Ruiz Diaz? Will you bring in a Reynoso? These players who maybe aren't these galaxy-busting names, they aren't these ticket sellers necessarily, but they get your team over the line, because to me that's been the issue. And as I wrote on the, that column you're referencing on the Striker, Weeby, like in a lot of ways, this is a celebratory moment for FC Dallas. This is how it's supposed to work. They sold Brian Reynolds, a beloved son of the club, for money, and now can use that money to make the club get even better. But sometimes we just haven't seen that last part actually happen. It's possible that it's being invested in the academy to make more Brian Reynolds, right? And certainly they can point to a Justin Shee, a, you know, and even going back, a Weston McKinney, a Reggie Cannon, you know, Paxton Pomykal, who I think will have a great year for FCD this year, and then who knows what his future is. But that always seems to be the question for me, and it's a question I don't think the Hunts, despite saying, and I take them at their word, that they're going to plow this back into the club. I think fans in Dallas and Frisco and Fort Worth, whatever part of the Metroplex they're from, I think, you know, have a legitimate reason to say, I'm a little skeptical that that money is going to go to the first team.
Where would you think, looking at this roster, this depth chart, their needs, their goals, their moves in the offseason, where that money might go? Would it be center forward? It doesn't feel to me like maybe it would be, because Frank O'Hara and, of course, Ricardo Pepi is there. Would it be left wing, where they brought in Vargas, but it's a little bit more in flux, let's say? Would it be a 10, although Requarte is sort of moving around in those circles as well, and you have Paxton and you have Ferreira? Like, where could that money go? Where would the most logical place be?
I think it's just, you could say, attack, right? FC Dallas's defense was so solid last year. I think they like where they are at goalkeeper with Jamie Maurer, Felipe, and Kyle Zobek. I think Matt Hedges is a center back, and the new addition from Spain and Brisson give them a good base where they can even go three at the back if they want to and play with a wing back like Ryan Hollingshead on one side, and whoever ends up filling that right back role that Brian Reynolds has vacated. You know, they can do a lot of different things. Even a guy like Ricarte, like, he can play the 10, but he also can play the 8. We saw him do a lot of the dirty work whenever he showed up, and that was a bit of a surprise for me, because, you know, watching his film in Colombia, I really thought he was going to be sort of a luxury playmaker, a number 10 who just wanted to set up goals. Maybe he plays more of that role this year, but I still think they need something in attack. You know, Frank O'Hara, to be fair to him, he arrived in very difficult circumstances. He thought MLS's back was going to be his kind of adjustment period. Then FC Dallas didn't get to participate in that tournament because of the COVID cases. And then it was uncertain, and he had a difficult time adjusting. Maybe he pops out as the 9. Maybe he scores like he did at Pachuca. And I think they're really high on Ricardo Pepi, as they should be, right? Like, Pepi had that great goal in the playoffs. There's no reason to think he can't contribute as well. I still think that whether it's a 9 or a winger, there's something that can be missing from FC Dallas's attack, again, that takes them from good or fine to great, to contending, to beating teams like Seattle, Minnesota United, whoever it is that they come up against in the playoffs, and to provide consistency. I think that's something they really lacked last year, was consistency in attack. So even Clark Hunt on the call kind of said, you know, the attack is where we're going to be looking. I think that's where they have to look. I think they have to look for something else if that money comes, you know, if this window is the one they use the money in, or more likely in the summer. But even then, it's about who's available. And I guess if they do wait until the summer, they have the luxury, we hope, of having several games under their belt to see what's not clicking, what's not working, because there are a lot of moving pieces with this team, like you mentioned.
You got to have a right back, though.
Maybe you can go.
Sorry. I threw the finger up. Didn't know if you saw.
Yeah.
Just saying, got to have a right back. Who plays right back? Is it like pipeline time? Is Mundroma or whoever it might be? Are they just pushing right in? Or
it's interesting. I'm fascinated to see what happens once they get into camp and what their idea is there. I've heard that Ima Tomasi could be a player that they repurpose and do a conversion project, which, of course, Brian Reynolds is a converted winger. So they've certainly had success at that before. Ryan Hollingshead is so versatile, you could flip him to the right side and roll with John Nelson, who they drafted a few years ago and really like. You could have Eddie Mundroma, who you mentioned, a pipeline product, that kind of you know, the next man up philosophy, I think they have options there. And I guess the luxury that FC Dallas has, I think, is that, first of all, they do have experience in the team. They have experience on that back line. If you want to roll with someone who's a little more green there, you're probably okay, right? So I think that they're probably, you know, Lucci Gonzalez, Andres Anota, the staff, probably more concerned about, you know, again, who's scoring the goals, who's giving us that attacking consistency, than who do we plug in the Brian Reynolds hole. It is a hole. It does need to be plugged, but I think they'll be able to find someone relatively quickly. Whatever option they like, I think probably could work out for them.
So we talk a lot about Brian Reynolds. Obviously, we've done so for good reason. The move that's almost more interesting to me is the Justin Shea move. Of you look at what happened with Weston McKennie and then how they handled it with Chris Richards, and now you have North Texas SC, and the way this club has sort of figured out how to deal with young prospects and deal with trying to win and sell and all the things going on. You're closer to it. You know these players better than I do, and their movement of all of it. What do you make of how FC Dallas has sort of figured out their model, or have they, or is this still just case by case?
I think they have a machine, right? It really does feel like it's callous in a way to talk about humans like this, but it's a production line, right? And why would it stop? In DFW, in the Metroplex, we have great talent. There's talent in almost all of the youth clubs. Even if you're, you know, not in the FC Dallas group, you can look at a historic club like Dallas Texans, all sorts of groups. I'm going to leave them out if I try and start listing. But I think that they figured it out. They really have. And especially with the partnership with Bayern, you get these guys who are able to go and get high-level training during the off season. They're able to see, have brushes with, you know, Chris Richards was taken under David Alaba's wing. Like that makes a difference, right? And that's something that very few clubs in MLS, very few clubs in the Americas can offer a young kid to say, hey, you know what? We're going to send you over to Bayern for a month or two. You're going to meet David Alaba or Robert Lewandowski or whoever it is. You know, that's a good selling point. And so is the fact that you can say, you remember Chris Richards? You remember Brian Reynolds? Yeah, we got those guys over there. They sold for a lot of money. They're living their dream, right? So I think they have kind of the marketing side down from the player recruitment standpoint. I think they have the technical side down with Bayern and with other kind of partner clubs. The one area, and this comes back to what I was saying at the start, that I think this strategy, where I feel like it maybe falls a little short, is FC Dallas benefits. They, you know, make a lot of money from the transfer fee. The player benefits. They get to live their dream. They're in a good situation, the Bayern experience or wherever they end up in Europe because of the connections. That goes well for them as well. The fans can't, you know, Brian Reynolds, he played half of the season with FC Dallas and he'd been in the club for so long that I think a lot of supporters had a relationship with him. They like him. They knew him on the field. He became a bit of a, you know, he's in memes. Like there is that closeness that comes with being a fan of a team, being a fan of a player. With Chris Richards, he went to Bayern before he'd even made a single first team appearance with FC Dallas. Justin, she could be on the same path. So I think, again, the club wins, the players win, so maybe no one cares. But I think the fans are getting a little bit of the squeeze in this model. Now, again, financially, you know, in some ways the fans, you know, I don't want to say the fans don't matter, but in this situation, like, I think that may be the feeling, right? So that is one thing I'm fascinated to see, is if maybe there is more fan support for North Texas, where you can see these players, because sometimes they're not going to make a first team appearance for FC Dallas. But I guess then none of that is a problem if they win. If they lift MLS Cup and you don't get to meet your young players, yeah, that's fine. Like, whatever, we won MLS Cup, we can celebrate that trophy. But if the investment, the money that comes from this Brian Reynolds transfer and from other revenue sources keeps getting invested back in the academy, and then those academy players keep joining other teams before fans even get to see them for the first team, why go to FC Dallas games? Why buy a jersey? Why get excited about the future of my club when the present of my club never arrives, right? So that is the one thing that I think, you know, still kind of needs to be resolved for FC Dallas, because at some point you do need your first team to matter today in the present, right? And right now it really does feel like, yes, they have ambitions. Yes, they have won a few trophies in the past, but that ultimate goal of winning MLS Cup that every year everyone in the organization says is their top priority rarely truly feels like that top priority. Maybe that starts to change in the next few years.
I'm here. Here's my impersonation real quick. I'm taking away the little hair I have. Matt Doyle now. What do you make of Paxton Pomykal? What do you make of his health update? What do you expect from him? When is he back? What are we going to see from him? What is he more of as a player? Was that good? Did I know?
No, didn't. No, I didn't buy that at all.
I wasn't feeling it. I didn't have a hat.
Yeah, that was a pretty poor impression. But the question remains, what's up with Paxton?
I think the Paxton situation will be more fun to watch and listen to than Goss's impression. there was so much hope, and in some ways, I think, you know, people have sort of like left him by the wayside because he was like the next great hope after the U-20 World Cup. I think he still could be. I don't think there's any reason to say that Paxton Pomykal won't have success. From what I understand, healthy, you know, we obviously haven't been able to attend trainings because of the COVID pandemic, and right now there are no trainings. So we'll have to see. I'm very fascinated to see what Luchi Gonzalez does with him positionally this year, because there are some question marks on the wings for FC Dallas. They brought in two new players, Yadier O'Brien, and traded Michael Barrios. So I think they feel like that's probably a like-for-like replacement. Vargas from Venezuela, I'm not so sure will be able to immediately step in and win that starting job. So who's the winger? Could be Paxton, right? If Luchi Gonzalez wants to play him there. He also excelled, I think, in a lot of ways as an eight. He does a lot of hard work. He tracks back. He plays defense. You know you're going to get performance out of him there. So I think you could see him play there. I'm very fascinated to see where the coaching staff feels like he plays best. I would also say that I think, you know, with the Brian Reynolds situation as one kind of maybe example 1A, the coaching staff has earned the benefit of the doubt for where to put players, right? Luchi Gonzalez and his staff, you know, Peter Lucene and those guys, they converted Brian Reynolds to right back. That worked phenomenally. They utilized Ryan Hollingshead as a winger sometimes this year with Santiago Mosquera not performing up to what they expected from him, what they hoped they would get from him, and that worked out. You know, that was in the Portland playoff game that worked for them. So I think the coaching staff has earned some benefit of the doubt. I do think there have been times where players maybe have struggled to do – like Jesus Ferreira is a perfect example. He's an amazing performance with the national team as a number nine, but with FC Dallas, that's not where they see him. And I think he struggled to find his place. I think he struggled to grow, struggled to take a step forward. So I hope that doesn't happen with Paxton. And I hope that he is in a spot. He's a versatile player, which I think sometimes can hurt young players who are trying to break out, trying to develop, and trying to kind of reach the expectations that people set out for him. But hopefully he's fully healthy. It sounds like everything is well on track. Where he ends up playing, to me, is still a big question mark.
I heard a podcast with him where he was saying he's training right now, just not with the other guys, but he feels good. So I mean, that's the first step for Paxton, is to feel good, to be able to stay on the field. In that interview, and I'm struggling to remember what podcast I was listening to, he's basically saying, look, I can't think about Europe now. I have to have a full season of being healthy and being impactful. Now, we do know the Striker Texas is not just FC Dallas. You guys are hitting it all. And I remember going on those trips when I was a kid. It's like 6 hours between everything in Texas. It's like, it's so annoying, man. You have to have something to keep you busy. Take us down to Houston. I said they're one of the winners of the offseason so far. They're focusing on domestic talent. But then I see this report, Carlos Salcedo. I'm intrigued, and I'm wondering what you guys within the Striker Texas pool are thinking about the Dynamo right now, what they're doing and where they're going.
If you get a guy like Carlos Salcedo, I think that changes the panorama, right? Because the frustration, I think, for Dynamo fans is that they always have a team that seems to be nearly there. Even this offseason, you say that they're the winner, I'm not so sure, man, because you look and, yeah, I think they did well to get money for Manotas, who probably was going to leave after that, you know, if that happens. But, you know, Manotas, at least, like, these are players who kind of formed what was supposed to be the core of the Dynamo, was supposed to be this exciting attack, and then it didn't come through. And I think you look at this year at their front line, Darwin Quintero needs to have a big bounce back year for them to really have an expectation to be a lot better than they were last year. Now, if you show up at the back, you bring in a versatile player, maybe that can help you, right? But I think that Dynamo fans in some ways are in the same boat as FC Dallas fans, where they're just waiting for the big one, right? Waiting for some signing to come in, waiting for something to click. And it doesn't feel like that happened this offseason. The difference is that FC Dallas has, A, been making the playoffs habitually, and B, can point to, hey, we got this academy talent. And Houston, as fertile or more fertile than Dallas for soccer talent, for young players who can stand out. And yet that has never filtered up to the Dynamo. So look, I think, you know, in some ways, there should be patience, right? Because Tab, it's just his second year, that you need that academy talent to filter up to match what FC Dallas has done. That's going to take time. That's going to take years, right? But you do need to do something to keep fans on board now, to win a little bit now. I get the sense, and I'm not in Houston right now, and I haven't been able to make it down there as often as I like for obvious reasons, but I get the sense that there's a little bit of restlessness there. So a new player, a new face could go a long way.
You know, I disagree on some of those points, but I'm so mesmerized by your flow and just the way that you're just pushing it aside out of the eyes. It's just, it's too much for me. I can't stay here much longer.
I got to start doing something. I really want to do like a man bun situation. I know. Just to do it once, because look, I'm not going to be able to do it for much longer, right? Like this is starting, the power alley is starting to hit. You know, I'm sure, you know.
What, you're saying you're going to be doing Matt Doyle impersonations soon?
Yeah, it's not going to be long. It's not going to be long.
All right, let's end here. Let's end here on Austin, on an expansion season in testing times. I like their build so far. Their stadium looks beautiful. It seems like they're doing a lot of things right. What's your like minute sell to people on what's happening in Austin right now and what they could be?
I think they could be the most exciting MLS team in Texas. I think that their marketing has been spot on. I think that fans there are excited. And I hope that that interest that exists pushes the other MLS teams in the state to try and be as exciting, as dynamic off the field, marketing-wise, getting fans in the seat. I like their build as well. I think they have a good team. And obviously, you know, we know that you have to win to be good. But as the first professional team in a city ever, you know, at this level, there's going to be excitement around it, right? So I think they have time. I think the luxury of time is in a way on their side, because they could sign two more DPs in the summer. They can wait. They can see how things are looking, and they have a good group around them in the front office. So for me, I think the team will be successful. I think they're going to be able to be an impressive expansion team. They can make an even bigger splash here in a few months, but they can wait for that because they have the luxury of already being the coolest thing in town, the sexiest team in the state. So again, hopefully it pushes everyone forward. Hopefully people are talking about Austin. Austin's doing well on the field. And the other Texas teams say, we got to match that. We got to find that same spark that they have.
We'll triumvirate in Texas. All right. Thank you so much, John. Last thing, of course, the Striker Texas. I'm sure we have a ton of people who live in Texas, care about Texas soccer, want to know more about Texas soccer. Give us the sell and we'll let you go.
Yeah, it's myself in Dallas, Chris Bills in Austin, Victor Ariza down in Houston, covering MLS. There's also Dash coverage of college soccer, coverage of youth. Anything that's soccer in Texas, we're going to be covering it. It's, I believe, $6 or $7 per month, but there's a 30-day subscription. You can trial. You can jump in there and try, see if you like it, and we hope you will. We think there's a lot of stuff for everyone to sink their teeth into. Also, we got a conference coming up called the Texas Soccer Summit. We're assembling almost 100 different voices from the state, again, from MLS to youth, men's, women's, whatever the case. That's going to be next weekend, I think the 10th through the 14th. It's free. So just sign up, register, and you can watch live or on demand those conversations we're going to be having with some of the biggest names in the state, or maybe some names that you don't know about that you haven't heard from, but have some great insight as well. So we hope people will join us, and I'm really excited about kind of the future of the project.
I'm sold, man. I'm sold. The Striker Texas. Go check it out, folks. Thank you so much, John. Appreciate your time, man.
My pleasure, guys. Talk soon.
Oh, John Arnold is the man. Wish I was eating tacos with him somewhere on a road trip, but that'll have to wait. Let's just run through some transfers.
Hold on a sec. How long do we think John's got before?
I don't, you know, like, you guys can.
I've known John just a little bit for a long time, and like that male pattern baldness is really setting.
Doyle, did you like my impersonation of you? Did you see
that? It was pretty bad. I thought maybe it was right to call you out.
Like, yeah, it was awful. I'm going to step out of this situation and let the experts make a prediction there, and just hope that holds. Just hope that holds up top for myself. All right, quickly, Carlos Costa Salcedo to Houston Dynamo. Good, bad, in the middle, Doyle. Quick takes.
It would be great if it happens. I'm not going to hold my breath on that one, though.
Okay. Yeah, how about this?
No negative, because Houston's not spending that money. They haven't historically spent it anywhere else, right?
Right.
So you could say, in theory, what you would assume the deal would be could be expensive for a center back. But for one, Houston to get a player of that caliber, Mexican World Cup player in his prime, all those things would be great. The other is, it would be a strength now for them at center back, which can change the way they build their team. You don't need to be as dangerous at number nine.
Do you remember when Weeby said quick takes?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I liked that. But then I settled into like, but then my normal sort of like instinct is just to let us talk as long as we want. So I just reverted back to that.
I promise this. My take about Bjorn Janssen.
It's going to be shorter.
Will be
Bjorn shorter. Bjorn Mars Johnson is a big soccer legend. I remember like 10 years ago when I want to say, like Dave Marino Nacheson identified him as an American dual national playing in like the depths of the Norwegian youth leagues. Anyway, he's with Montreal now.
Yeah, New York City born. He's 6'5". He's a large number nine. He's been bouncing around a little bit. He most recently, I've already forgotten where he was at. Oh, he's in South Korea. Yeah, he's in South Korea. But he had some good time in the Eredivisie with Otto Den Haag and AZ, and then he had a little bit of success, which is a real quick stint with Rosenborg. So we'll see what he does in Montreal. They also signed Joaquin Torres. So a couple signings for them. Red Bulls are in, according to the Daily Record, for Cameron Harper, a 19-year-old American forward who's at Celtic. Here's the quote from the Daily Record. The Major League Soccer outfit and the Hoops have thrashed out an undisclosed fee that will see the 19-year-old return to his homeland with immediate effect, which I feel like that's like Mad Lib sentence for the Daily Record.
The understanding was his contract was up, so it's probably a small number to get him to come a little earlier because he could already sign a pre-contract. And The Athletic, I think, had this earlier expected. Andre Reyes didn't have a great year last year, but this and the Andre Reyes move are just smart moves. I don't know that it means they'll win MLS Cup, and I don't know that it means they're the best club in MLS, but these feel like moves they were making 5 years ago that they hadn't made over the last few years. It's a young American that can probably start for you, cost you nothing, and then you can sell on. Like, these are moves that they should be making. And so I think that's positive for the Red Bulls.
So I actually see this as this is a, oh man, we really let our academy grow fallow and we have to replenish that pipeline somehow. And that was the same thing as with Caden Clark. Like, if they were producing Caden Clark's or Cameron Harper's out of their academy, then they wouldn't need to make a move like this. The fact that they have is, I think it's good for MLS. It's good for the Red Bulls. And hopefully Harper lives up to his rep and can do what Caden Clark did last year and put himself in the crosshairs of a Bundesliga caliber team. He is reportedly a kid with that type of potential. And credit to the Red Bulls front office for making do, but they got it to be the team that they were from 2013 to 2018. They have to start churning guys out of their academy again, and they haven't done it in a while now. I know they've been in a lot of flux there. Let's hope that they are able to turn that around, because 5 years ago you would have said Red Bulls and FC Dallas neck and neck in terms of the best academy in the league. Now it's not even close.
You can respond to that at a later date, Dave.
We're
going fast here. Nashville officially signs Rodrigo Pinheiro. We've seen this rumor out there for a long time. 21-year-old Uruguayan winger, 80 or so professional appearances so far, a couple caps for the Uruguayan U-20s. Does he help them take the next step? Give me 30 seconds. Who's got it?
I have no idea. It's always hit and miss with young South Americans. It's a nice stab. It's the type of move that you want to see a team make. But I think the real determinant factor for Nashville taking the next step is how good can Hani Mukhtar be this year? If the answer is like, a little bit better than he was last year, then they're not taking the next step. If the answer is actually he's going to look like a $10 million playmaker, then this is a team that can surprise a lot of folks in the league.
Yeah, you wonder if he's really straight number 10, more of sort of float, do what you want, second forward. And he also looked pretty good in sort of wing transition spots last year as well. We'll see on this one. Orlando City signs Jonathan Suarez, 23-year-old left back on loan from Querétaro. We're not going to stick with that one, though it seems like a smart signing for them. Yep. Galaxy maybe have found their Pavone replacement, if they don't get Pavone, which who knows at this point. Austin International, 24-year-old.
More like a replacement for the guy that you fired because his family was not doing the good things early.
Yes, that is probably what it would be. Hopefully they get them both. That would be dope. Then Greg Vanney would have not just one incredible winger, but if this guy is living up to his resume, two of them, which would be cool. William Yarbrough also on a 3-year deal to the Rapids. Okay, the mailbag, 412-060 MLS. Extra time at MLSsoccer.com. Countdown begins via producer Anders.
We have an email from Jared in Milwaukee who
I think he's become a little bit of a mailbag legend.
Yeah. But now we get Greg Berhalter's response to our question about David Ferrer, which was technically supposed to be about Jesus Ferrer, but for Andrew.
I mean, after this show, 25 lashes. 25 lashes for using false nine, for saying David Ferreira. I mean,
so let me just ask this question, and it's summing up what Jared's saying, which is, if David Ferrer If Jesus Ferreira is a number nine or should be a number nine, let's say it doesn't happen for FC Dallas, what MLS team would you want to see him, whether with the way they play or for him setup wise, whatever, would you want to see Jesus Ferreira be a number nine at?
Jesus, follow the Oscar Pereja path. Go to the Colorado Rapids and play that sort of can drop, can stretch the line, be a finisher sort of forward for the Colorado Rapids. Diego Rubio's already sort of in this mold in some ways.
As is Shinichiki.
Yeah. I mean, they already – and they have Lewis, they have Barrios, they have Nomaly, they have Benazee. Shinichiki could play out there. They have these late-arriving runners from the midfield in both sometimes Acosta, but a lot of times Cole Bassett. Colorado Rapids.
So it's interesting. Donald, you go first, and then I guess I can.
Yeah, I think Weeby came up with the right answer. The other one that jumped to mind was NYCFC, because they've done some false nine stuff over the years. Eber and Tati Castellanos are both super mobile, like to combine rather than just purely stretch the field. Both more, I think, pure forwards than Ferreira is, but I think the Rapids is actually the correct answer.
Okay. That I thought the Rapids wouldn't make sense because they already have those guys.
Yeah, I mean, that is
fair. So from style, I agree with you. Also, is there ever a limit?
I mean, wait a minute. If you can't beat out Diego Rubio and Andre Shinichiki, then you're not a national team caliber striker in this era. Okay. So like you have to, no matter who you are, whether you're Josh Sargent or Jossie Zardes or Jesus Ferreira or, you know, Josie Altidore, I'm going through all the J's. Like you're gonna have competition, and you're gonna have to beat that competition out. Now maybe Jesus Ferreira can do that this year with Dallas playing, not a false nine, but like if you know, to answer Jared's question, like if you're gonna send him to one team that would seem to fit him in terms of what his skill set is and what we've seen from him at his best, which is this kind of linking up, but also at times a predator in the box type of center forward. Colorado's it, and if you can't beat out Diego Rubio, then you're not the guy who's going to win a starting job for the U.S. Men's National.
Could DC give Jared's voice in here, I think he brought up RSL and what Krylak has done in space. Obviously, they brought in Bobby Wood, but again, if you can't beat a guy out, you're not a national team forward.
What about DC? A lot of wingers. I don't know if that's how Losada's going to play, but...
Yeah, the interesting thing is if DC go to a 3-5-2...
And that two forward, if he's a floater, that's pretty good.
Well, I actually think that Ferreira's true position is as a second forward. And I think that if you have him with like an Ola Kamara type and then a playmaker underneath him, he could end up sort of blowing up. And I'm thinking back to like the great RSL teams where Fabian Espíndola was that second forward, and he would go everywhere and try to make the game. And I could see Jesus Ferreira being really, really good in that type of situation. But there just aren't a lot of teams in MLS that play with a second forward. Almost everybody has a three-man front line.
All right, we're getting out of here. Big thanks to Greg Berhalter and John Arnold. Repeat after me, everybody, at the same time. Jesus Ferreira, Jesus Ferreira, Jesus Ferreira. The year is not 2010, Andrew.
No one else had a problem until you stepped into the room.
I've caused this problem.
I still haven't had that problem. Yeah. So there you go.
We all have our own problems. Deal with yours. We'll see you on the next time. Have a great week, everybody.